But we got a great first guest out the bat. It's Mr. Will Perdue, who a lot of you all know, of course, from the first three championships that the Bulls had. He won another one with San Antonio. Of course, works for NBC Sports Chicago. Now, Will, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, John, I'm doing well. And hey, can't complain about the Tears for Fears open like that.
Yes, exactly. Pete Zimmerman behind the glass picking that one. All right, Will, we've had a chance to talk on the Jam, but here on WGN, I wanted you just to share your thoughts watching The Last Dance in general. You've appeared on the show a couple times. Must be a trip to watch what you lived in real life play out to the country.
It's been enjoyable. I did not get an advance showing of all the episodes. Some people did. I elected not to because, you know, I wanted to, A, watch it with my wife, and we were not married at the time when I played, and also, you know, my 16-year-old son, who obviously wasn't born at that time. So it's been enjoyable to watch it in real time with them, not only to see their reactions, but also knowing I experienced it. It's been quite honestly very enjoyable. It's almost been like a little reunion because, you know, each of us are calling each other to get on podcasts and do radio shows together. But it's also been a little reminder about, you know, just how difficult what we did was and just the sacrifices that we had to make, the drama that was involved, the tension. You know, it's fun to watch, but I'm you know, we realized that it took a lot, and it took a lot out of us to make that happen.
You know, as a kid who grew up in the 80s and the 90s, I took it for granted how easy it was for the Bulls to win six championships. You tuned in, you're like, yeah, of course they're going to win. It is great to see the grit and what you guys had to go through beating the Pistons to get along that way. How, I don't want to say realistic because I know it's all true, but how does it really capture the sense well of how tough it was, how fun it was? Are we getting a good glimpse of what it was really like to be a part of those teams?
I fully think so. You know, I thought a perfect antidote was when they showed Michael last week in episode 7 and 8, where, you know, wherever they are on the road, he's laying on the couch and he's like, listen, this is not a life that you want to emulate. Yeah, you want to be Michael Jordan because of his skill set. You want to have Michael Jordan's money and you'd like to have his fame. But there's a lot of things that go through, you know, being Michael Jordan or being a movie star that people don't think about, that you really just don't want to do. I mean, the guy couldn't go out of the hotel when we were on the road. You know, he had his security staff that traveled with him, that stayed on his hallway because people would try to sneak up the stairwell and come knock on his door and, you know, just to get a glimpse of him, just to touch him. It was very invasive, and, you know, a lot of times that invasive just kind of spilled over into our lives because of Michael, but we all knew that that kind of was what came with the price of being successful and winning championships, but it's not all fun and games, as you pointed out. There's a lot that goes on, and there were some days where it was not fun, but, you know, 30 years later, as we look back on it, we're like, yeah, that was really fun back then. But as I said, there's some memories that make you realize that there were times at night where you just cut the lights off at whatever time, and you were sore, mentally exhausted, frustrated, and you were just praying and hoping that the next day would be different.
I imagine you're sick of talking about this story already, but I've just got to ask it because it kind of came up in the last episode. You and I have chatted about it before, but I was going to praise you as one of the few people in the world that Michael Jordan has punched, but you say that maybe there's more people on the team that got it than we realize.
Well, it wasn't just Michael. It was everybody. I mean, we got into arguments all the time, pushing matches, shoving matches. It got heated. I mean, many times where guys had to be separated in practice. Never to the point where practice, you know, was called off. And they said, all right, this is enough. You know, you guys are getting a little too heated here. But, you know, apparently this upcoming weekend in episodes 7 and 8, they're really going to break down into detail the Steve Kerr, Michael Jordan fight and what led to that. But that was just something that made us so good was the competitive nature, the fact that guys were going at each other, the fact that guys wouldn't back down. You know, and Michael did get a good shot on me, but unfortunately, unlike Steve, I didn't end up with a black eye. I just ended up as, you know, one of the guys that ended up on the receiving end of a MJ punch.
Yeah. Was it easy to then move on and be okay hours later, or does that stuff linger with you for days and through the next games?
No, it didn't linger at all. I mean, everybody understood it was about the competitiveness of what we were trying to do. And let's be honest here, that that anger, that aggression, that willingness to win and sacrifice was brought to the surface by Michael. So I'm not saying you remove Michael from the situation and none of that happens, but that's just, it started with him and went through the whole team. And that was, A, trying to earn his respect, but B, also earning the respect of your teammates as well, which led to that trust factor of, hey, once we get into the game, I know, you know, we know, you know, we're all prepared, we're all put in a position to succeed, and we're all ready to play. And that, you know, again, is part of the equation of what made these teams so good.
Will, you have one of the distinct honor of being traded for a future Hall of Famer in Dennis Rodman. Is it going to be harder to watch the team win the next three knowing that you weren't a part of it? Or is it going to be interesting because maybe you aren't privy to all the details of it? Or, I guess, what's your attitude moving forward as you're no longer going to be part of the final three championships that we all get to watch?
Well, at the time, I was very disappointed I was traded because, as you mentioned, I thought I was going to be, you know, stripped of winning more championships. But, you know, as time has gone on, I can honestly say that I was traded straight up for Dennis Rodman, who was, you know, a Hall of Famer. So, I feel like I had value at the time. I know that's not too impressive by Dennis. He's not happy about it. But if I say, hey, man, it's bygones be bygones. And during the time that they were winning championships, I talked to Steve and Bill Winnington and Scotty Horace, those guys, you know. But I'm also looking forward to watching, as there's a lot of things that happened that I wasn't privy to at the time. But, you know, the thing I do say is that, you know, maybe I would have won more championships, obviously, with Chicago, but it helped me when I got traded to San Antonio learn a lot about myself. It helped me grow my game, and it answered a lot of questions personally. So I think at the end of the day, it was a win-win.
And you got another championship.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to play with Tim Duncan and David Robinson. So the two things I'm very proud of, you know, amongst a lot of things, is one, I was in Chicago for their first championship and bring that to the people of Chicago, but also for Michael Jordan and Bill Cartwright and John Paxson, veteran players. But I was also in San Antonio for when they won their first in 99 for, you know, David Robinson and Avery Johnson and, you know, that organization and the people of San Antonio. So that means a lot to me.
All right. So when the Jordan Rules book came out from Sam Smith, they really portrayed it as a controversial thing. And then Michael kind of threw that maybe it was Horace that leaked all that stuff. Horace returned, said, no, it wasn't me. Did it really break, you know, cause that much tension in the locker room, or was that a little made-for-TV drama?
Well, it caused drama, no doubt about it, and it caused a little tension because we were all trying to figure out, okay, where'd the leak come from? Because one of the things we always talked about was we always keep things in-house, you know, kind of like when you go to Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in the locker room, what happens on the plane, you know, stuff like that that we think that doesn't need to get out, doesn't get out. How did Sam Smith come up with all this information when a lot of it was fairly accurate? I'm not saying 100%, but enough to the point where he couldn't just guess about this. He had to get some information. And I had Sam Smith on, and he mentioned that, you know, I got a little information from everybody. Sometimes it was unbeknownst to the person, and sometimes it was given to me voluntarily. And I will say this, he didn't say exactly who gave him all the information, but when I asked him the question, he talked about how one of his best things was back then, remember, we used to travel commercial, and the beat writers travel on the same exact flights as us. And he talked about how, you know, coaches didn't sit in first class, players did, and it went by seniority, so there were also a lot of players that sat in coach as well. But a lot of times he made sure he had a seat right across the aisle from Phil Jackson. Now, he didn't say that Phil Jackson gave him all the information, but he did let us know that he sat next to Phil Jackson a lot in coach across the aisle and had a lot of interesting conversations.
Yeah, that's an incredible thought, because if it is Phil, and I know you're not saying it is, even for some of the information, you know, I wouldn't put it past the Zen master to know how to work people from the angle of the press.
No, listen, he was fabulous at using the media to get it across his message. He did an awesome job of controlling the narrative. He knew how to motivate players through the media. He knew how to get at it, officials through the media, opposing coaches. You remember when we were playing the Knicks and he talked about, well, I'm pretty sure that the league is going to take some action against the physicality of the Knicks by how they officiate the next game. So what does that do? That puts all the onus and the attention on the officials, and they don't want that. And he was a mastermind at doing things like that. So, you know, if I had to bet on somebody, I'd say I would bet on Phil, but I'm not 100% sure.
Interesting stuff. Well, I know you got a lot of other things to do today. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your wife running the Bonhomme Hospitality Group, and they're doing great things. They have a lot of different places that people have heard of, Beatnik, along the river, those things. And they're doing their best to help make sure that their workers are still getting paid during this time. I imagine she's stressed and trying to make sure that everyone is employed as much as possible and taken care of during this difficult time.
Yes, they are, and they're doing a campaign called Miss Your Face. And like a lot of other restaurant groups and hospitality groups throughout the city, they're selling gift cards, which means if you buy a gift card today, the money that goes to that gift card is actually being used by the Bonhomme Hospitality Group to go buy food and then prepared for the employees. They're actually cooking every Tuesday and Friday for all their employees. As everybody knows, you know, all the hospitality workers, there's 11 million of them across the country that are unemployed. So they're trying to do their best to provide family meals for them twice a week. And the money that you put towards a gift card now can be redeemed when restaurants are open, which we found out from Pritzker just the other day is not going to be till the end of June, which really means July 1st, unless something changes. So we still got a ways to go. So quite honestly, John, there's a lot of restaurants that are not going to make it to July 1st unless there's some kind of bailout package like they did for the airlines or like they did for the car companies back then. Something has to happen. We can't just rely on people to buy gift cards and do donations, but they do appreciate it. It helps feed the families now. Anybody that's on unemployment knows that dollar doesn't go a long way, but those that have the means to do so, if you could buy a gift card, it would be well appreciated, and it's put to good use.
Bonhomme Group is Bonhomme Group.com. Will Perdue, have a good round, my friend.
Oh, it's a beautiful day for a round of golf, is it not, my friend?
I am so jealous. What are you going to shoot? What does Will Perdue shoot, typically?
Well, today I'm actually going to go on the practice holes at the Merritt Club up in Libertyville. We have three practice holes. I'm going to work on my game for about 2 hours since the driving range is not open at any golf course. So I'm going to be by myself, so I'm practicing social spacing.
Yep.
And I will walk and carry my club, but I will work on certain clubs. And then about 3:30, I'm going to go out and I'm going to play nine holes. And then I'm going to drive back to the city because I told my wife I would be home by about 6:30 so we could have dinner at 7.
There you go. Well, you are on a schedule, my friend. We'll let you get to it. Thanks for your time, Will. We appreciate it.
Hey, John, I appreciate you having me. And if you're around next week, I'm more than willing to come on again, and we'll talk about what I actually shot.
Yeah, we'll get the follow-up. Will Perdue, of course, of the Bulls, and have a great day, Will.
All right, you too, John. Thank you.
Will Perdue, one of the best, one of the nicest guys out there, too. Great stuff. One of the many punched by Michael Jordan and traded for a future Hall of Famer in Dennis Rodman.